Hi, I'm Mike Veneria Jr. with Alsperity Private Wealth. No matter your occupation, whether you work for a big company or you're a small business owner, everyone wants to keep as much of their earnings as possible. I specialize in tax minimization strategies and retirement planning that'll help you build a strong financial future for you and your future generations. Call me, Mike Veneria Jr. at 856-252-0107.
Securities through Sanctuary Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services through Sanctuary Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
All right, guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. And if you're betting college football bowl games, and that can be a dicey endeavor, we're the podcast for you. We're releasing breakdowns for every matchup with new episodes dropping almost every day. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Veneria Jr. with Alsperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Veneria Jr., wealth management specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
We are learning so much about the January 6th committee. I went into great detail earlier about the gallows. Now the question is, Liz Cheney, witness tampering with Cassidy Hutchinson? Oh, yes. We'll talk about that as well. And a nightmare in Colorado. Welcome back. Glad you're here today. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli, our fourth and final hour. And a reminder, we'll be live in Cape May on Friday, the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, for our last show of the year, our Christmas Spectacular. Stay tuned for Jimmy Failla at 7 o'clock. It's his birthday today. Happy birthday to Jimmy Failla, the original admiral of the Zeoli Navy. I'll play a clip for you. This is the chief of Colorado in Aurora, Colorado. It was a terrible kidnapping incident. 14 illegal immigrants tortured a couple in what was, without question, a gang incident. Do you remember when it was Martha Raddatz who suggested to J.D. Vance that people in Aurora were not taking over housing complexes? She was only a couple. And they called us crazy for saying that the Venezuelan gangs were taking over the streets of Aurora. Well, here is the chief of police. Take a listen.
It was a male and a female. They were accosted by approximately 13 to 15 armed individuals. They were pistol whipped. They were beat. They were mistreated. One of the male was actually stabbed. He had a stab wound. So does that fall in the category of torture for me? Yeah, it does. There is a high assumption that they may be affiliated with the TDA gang. I had a discussion with an individual from the White House, and that occurred back on September the 23rd, I believe. And that person basically told me that, hey, once these immigrants get across the border, that's all we really care about. And to me, that's a problem.
Wow. Those are powerful words. That was the police chief in Aurora, Colorado, detailing a nightmare inside the walls of an apartment complex known to be home to members of that notorious Venezuelan gang, Tren de Aragua. More than a dozen suspects breaking into an apartment where they tied up, pistol whipped, and even stabbed two innocent victims. I can barely believe it as we say it.
There you go. We'll play this clip for you. Stephanie Ruhle from MSNBC talking about how accessible Donald Trump was during the election and how inaccessible Kamala Harris was. So she was on a podcast and Justin had to edit it because there was a lot of swearing. So, Justin, thank you for editing it. But she was on a podcast and let me just give you the details of this. Karluska P is who tweeted this out originally, Carly Bonnet. I don't know the name of the podcast. I'm trying to figure this out if it's in there, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, here's the clip. Take a listen.
Donald Trump had that crazy rally at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Garbage. I rolled the dice and I called him on the phone. And he answered.
Of course he did. Of course. What'd he say?
And I wasn't calling to chit-chat. I said, Mr. President, this is Stephanie Ruhle. You made a lot of comments last night, blah, 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 blah. And it was not an on-the-record conversation. Long story, so I'm not going to get into what he said. But I called for one reason. I said, you just said a whole bunch of public things. I'd like to sit down for an interview with you. We got 5 days before the election. So we didn't get into anything. There's nothing for me to report. I called him and said, I want an interview with you. Obviously, he said no. But my point is,
yeah.
I was able to get to him by dialing his phone.
Right.
Now, that might be completely... And you're like, I can't believe people know this guy's phone number.
Yeah.
But the reverse of that, if I were to want to connect
right.
with VP Harris or President Biden, there's 50 people mm-hmm. between me and that. I could write a note that maybe could get to somebody to get somebody, then through Pony Express and a pigeon,
yeah.
something might end up in a mailbox
right.
near them.
Yeah.
And I called DJT to say, yo, can I have an interview?
And he answered.
He still was able to connect with him. Yeah.
But he still picked up.
Exactly. And Kamala Harris, you couldn't get to her. She was elite and everything else. You see, Trump is incredibly accessible. And the media is so happy he won. Let me tell you something. They are so happy he won. And he's already doing press conferences. He's already taking their questions. Their ratings are going to go up. They love it. You know they love it. I know they love it. We know. We all know. That's the bottom line. Bottom line. They're thrilled. They're thrilled that Donald Trump is going to be in for another 4 years. And they know that there's going to be lots of stories and he's going to keep everything interesting. And it's going to be a wild ride for everybody. Wild ride for everybody. I just got a note. Ron Paul, Rand Paul's father, is going to be advising Doge. That's excellent. We'll talk about Doge and the balanced budget amendment a little bit later in the show today. But I think it's also important to understand something, which is that all of this that's exciting about everything, like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. told Senator Tommy Tuberville how important it is for food farmers in his state. And he said, we can't go overboard here when it comes to, like, you know, pesticide, like going after this stuff and everything. We got to be these people got to be able to make a living. And he says he understands that. All of these things are going to be incredibly interesting stories for the media to cover. And Trump is, he loves it. I mean, I don't know if Biden's alive or not. I have no idea. But Trump loves to be in the center of the action. And they're so excited. And they should be excited. It's going to be a wild ride. It's going to be an absolute wild ride. And no, he's not going to start pardoning people. Listen, I'll tell you something right now. This whole idea that we need to have these preemptive pardons, like Senator Bernie Sanders, for example, now suggesting that Biden should give preemptive pardons. Trump is not going to go in there and go after enemies. If you did something wrong, like Liz Cheney may have with witness tampering, well, then you got a problem. But if you haven't done anything wrong, why do you need a preemptive pardon? We're still a nation of laws. And unlike the last administration, we're not going to just go after our political enemies. So if you haven't done anything, what are you worried about? But here's Bernie Sanders on Meet the Press talking about this need for preemptive pardons. And this is the big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Do not let those year-end benefits expire. Leave them on the table. They reset on January 1st. Reach out to Dr. Mike today. Two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury. VeneriaDental.com, 856-786-2020. He is the master of dental implants. Cut number 7.
You know, when Trump talks about sending to jail people who are on that January 6th committee, that sounds like being a tin pot dictator. So I would hope that we have
dictator.
An FBI and a Justice Department that protects the civil liberties of the American people and does its best to protect American democracy.
Well, we know the White House is considering potential preemptive pardons of those who've clashed with President-elect Trump. In light of what the President-elect said to me, that yes, he does think that members of the January 6th committee should go to jail, do you think that Mr. Biden should issue preemptive pardons for the entire January 6th committee?
Well, I think he might want to consider that very seriously. Look, that is an outrageous statement. This is what authoritarianism is all about. It's what dictatorship is all about. You do not arrest elected officials
That's
who disagree
what you
with you.
That's what you, literally what you did to Trump in 4 different jurisdictions. Listen, I'm going to get into what the January, I've been talking about it throughout the show, I've been weaving in and out, but there's more that I haven't shared. I'm going to break it down for you, the top 10 things that the subcommittee discovered. And yeah, it does appear that there was some actual laws broken here. But with Trump, they made crap up. Like, they made stuff up about him and went after him. He had classified documents that he, all of it was nonsense. It was all nonsense. And everybody understands that. No, they went after their opposition in Donald Trump. And let me play another clip for you. Reid Hoffman. He's reportedly considering fleeing the country. He's concerned that Trump will target him through an IRS audit. This is a guy who supported Harris, and he says he gives it a 50% higher chance. He bankrolled the E. Jean Carroll defamation lawsuit. Following the assassination attempt in Butler, PA, Hoffman said he wished Trump had been an actual martyr. And now he's thinking about fleeing the country. I wonder if he actually will. Cut number 10.
You're one of the few people that's still a billionaire and on the left, it seems.
No, I'm not. I actually...
In the Valley, especially in this election cycle.
Well...
It's the public-facing people that we see on the podcasts and stuff. And
look, so part of the reason why I think less people were public about it this cycle was because, President Trump was threatening, you know, personal and political retaliation. Mm-hmm. And so you had to have a certain degree of courage to stand up. Mm. Right. And so, and courage in the public area, not just courage in taking risks and so forth, but in the public arena for doing that. And so I literally had conversations with billionaires who were like, oh, look, I really applaud what you're doing. And I think what you're doing is the exact right thing. And that's for you, not for me. Right. I mean, trying to get people into it. And so, so I was aware, and because they kind of did the simple mini max, and they said, well, if Harris is elected, I won't get penalized for not having supportive. And if Trump is elected, I will get penalized. So I'm just going to stand out of it. And
do you think you'll be penalized?
I think that there's a greater than 50% chance that there will be repercussions from a misdirection and corruption of the institutions of state to respond to my having tried to help Harris get elected.
These people, man, the paranoid fantasies that these people have. Like, dude, I got news for you. You're not that important. You narcissistic jackass. You're not that important. Trump is setting his sights on making the country succeed. He doesn't care about you, Reid Hoffman. He doesn't care. Unless you did something wrong. Did you do something wrong? Besides back in Kamala Harris, that is. Did you do something wrong that you should be worried about? Were you hoping that she'd get in and her IRS would look the other way? I mean, the only IRS that ever went after people was, that was Lois Lerner, and that was under Barack Obama. So, I remember it was this administration that hired 86,000 new IRS agents and accountants and people with guns to go after people, not Trump. Don't you love these people with their paranoid fantasies of a weaponized government when it's literally what they've been doing? Censoring the American people, threatening the American people, arming up the IRS, arming up all these federal agencies, and then prosecuting the president of the United States of America, the previous president, the future president. And also at the same time, while they're doing that, threatening moms at school board meetings, going after Christians who are praying outside of abortion clinics, Catholics at mass. I mean, the list goes on and on. But, you know, we've seen the weaponization. Trump wants to end that. I just saw a clip of Pam Bondi and Kash Patel walking through the halls of the Senate. They want to get in there and they want to stop this stuff. It has to end. It has to end. It goes. It ends. It ends with Trump. And he's going to end it. Because if he doesn't, we will lose our country because we already have a police state. There's so much that has to be undone. And I'll get into details with you about the police state under the guise of this January 6th committee and what was exposed by the January 6th subcommittee led by Chairman Barry Loudermilk. I'm also going to get into the latest gaslighting on the drones coming out of the White House and the Pentagon, too. And then how can we balance the budget and help DOGE achieve their goals. So a lot more to come in our fourth and final hour. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Well, the drones are still the big story of the day, no doubt about it. Drones, baby drones, everywhere, everywhere. every night for hours on hours, and the federal government keeps gaslighting us. Today, the latest is, listen, we're all over this, all right? Maybe sometimes you shoot down a drone, sometimes you don't shoot down a drone. It just depends on your mood. You're like, what? What are you talking about? A national security spokeshack, John Kirby, Baghdad Bob, talking today on CNN, and basically echoing that exact point. You know, it's like sometimes you feel like a mint, sometimes you don't. Honestly, it's like, well, you know, listen, all right, sometimes you take down a drone, sometimes you don't take down a drone. It just depends on how you're feeling at the time. You know what I mean? Like, hey, maybe we'll shoot it down. Maybe we'll watch it from the night sky. Maybe we'll just glance up at it. I don't know. I don't friggin' know. I don't know. But it really just depends. Let me take a little bit of Kirby. This is from CNN earlier today when he was on there with Kate Baldwin. Here we go.
Taking a big left turn here, and something else under your purview right now, John. I want to ask you more about this drone mystery that has continued. You say that currently these drones do not pose any sort of threat. The way I heard you say it is, you assess their commercial, lawful drones, law enforcement drones, hobbyist drones is what people are seeing. Nothing anomalous, no criminal activity detected yet. The mayor of Montville, New Jersey, was just on with us, and he essentially says he does not believe that. Let me play this for you.
If someone is making a really bad decision by not coming clean and say that these are our drones, we're doing some sort of an operation, nothing to see here, they are safe.
And what the mayor's talking about is these are our drones. Is he saying these are government drones? He is not happy with the response that he's been essentially getting from you guys. What do you say?
Well, I would repeat what we've said yesterday and last night in a multiple agency statement, that we have taken a serious look at this. We have gone through 5,000 some odd sightings. We have added detection capabilities to the region. We've even sent up visual observers. And everything we're seeing to date, our assessment tells us that these are commercial drones, hobbyist drones, or law enforcement drones, all operating legally and lawfully.
Oh, would you stop it? Commercial drones, hobbyist drones, or law enforcement drones operating lawfully. Why don't you tell them to stop them? Because the FAA has imposed drone restrictions and they're still flying. The FAA has imposed drone restrictions over restricted sites and they're still going over restricted sites. So if these are really commercial drones and they're amateur drones, then tell them to stop. But they're not, and you're lying. That's what you're doing, Kirby. You're lying. We're not stupid, you know. We're not stupid. And I'm so tired of the fact that they have to, like we have to pretend we're stupid. You know what I mean? Like, we have to pretend we're dumb, and we have to pretend as if, you know, oh, no, nothing you see here. There's nothing you see. It's all your lying eyes, kids. Just your lying eyes. Like, come on already. You know, and I know, and everybody else knows, these aren't commercial drones. This is very sophisticated. Here's the Pentagon, Pat Ryder, General Pat Ryder, reporting or answering the question.
Yes, but no specific question regarding these recent uptick over New Jersey, particularly.
You can forgive people for thinking that there's something going on. Yeah, I was just talking to our panel, Juan Williams and Alex Vogel. None of us have ever seen a drone around Washington, D.C. or the outskirts of Washington, D.C. As I mentioned earlier, there's severe flight restrictions in the district, but outside, you know, Alexandria, McLean, Silver Spring, Gaithersburg, places like that, nothing. Never seen anything. And we got the CIA, we've got Liberty Crossing, which is where the National Counterterrorism Center, and DNI, the NSA is just northeast of here, Bowling Air Force Base, I mean, the Joint Base Bowling. We got so many places around here that people would probably want to spy on, but we've never seen a drone.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Westchester County, though, they're up over Westchester.
What are you doing up there that we don't know about?
Thank you. You see, that was obviously not Major General Pat Ryder. He was on earlier, but that's the thing. I mean, these guys in Washington who are reporting about this are seeing the same stuff we're seeing here in Jersey. They're seeing the exact same stuff. And the thing about it is that we're supposed to pretend like this is perfectly normal. And nobody has ever seen anything like this, and they're going over some incredibly sensitive sites. As we speak, they're going over incredibly sensitive sites. Like, literally, while we're having this conversation, they're going over incredibly sensitive sites. Here was White House co-press secretary John Kirby earlier today with his nonsense. And, you know, I'm getting really tired of this guy with his gaslighting, because that's what it is. It's gaslighting. It's pure and utter gaslighting. You know it, and I know it, too. Everybody knows this. Everybody knows it's gaslighting. Here's a little bit more of Kirby. Go ahead.
When people shoot video of that, Kate, I mean, you're seeing the lights on these things, the navigation lights. That's what's required if you're going to be flying in U.S. airspace at night, are navigation lights. So clearly they're being operated in a lawful and legal way, and we've seen nothing from their behavior, nothing that tells us there's a public safety threat or a national security threat. I do want to add one point, though. We still got about 100 leads that the FBI is following up on. And if we learn something that contradicts that, or something more, something additional, something more specific, my goodness, we're going to come public and we're going to talk about it. We have been trying to be as transparent with the American people as we can.
Wow.
But I think it's also important to remember that there are a million drones registered with the FAA, and thousands upon thousands fly in U.S. airspace legally every single day, including in the Northeast Corridor. In fact, that's one of the busiest areas.
It's very true.
Oh, it's very true, CNN. Yes, go with the government's talking point on that. Very true. Exactly right. Very true. You know what else is funny, too, about this whole thing is that this has never happened before. At first, they had no answers. Now, they still have no answers, but now they have answers. And the answers are it's an everyday occurrence. This is just normal. What is it, Tuesday? It's Tuesday. And the night skies are lit up with drones. That's all. These look nothing like a drone you can buy at Best Buy or Sears catalog. These look nothing like a drone you can get at a convenience store or anywhere else for that matter. Nothing. But we're told that this is all perfectly normal. In fact, Kirby went on to say a little bit later, he went on to say that expect more of these things. You're going to see even more drones. Nobody has ever seen anything that looks like this. And don't you love how he's like, yeah, they got to have the red and green lights. Well, explain to me how the state police helicopter said that the lights disappeared, the drones disappeared when they went near them. Explain that to me. See, because I'd like to know that piece of this little puzzle. And we're not hearing that. We're not hearing that. Because they're not telling us that. They're acting like we are all nuts, that we're all crazy in this. And I'm just telling you, don't fall for it. Don't fall for their gaslighting. It's the same gaslighting they did around January 6th. You know, the report came out today. I mentioned this a little bit earlier in the show today regarding J6 and everything about this. And Greg Price did a good summary of this. The new report from the Oversight Oversight Subcommittee on the corruption of the January 6th committee is truly stunning. The timeline goes like this. Cassidy Hutchinson does three interviews with the J6 committee. Alyssa Farah, who's now on The View, connects Hutchinson with Liz Cheney, and they start directly communicating a blatant ethics violation. Liz Cheney convinces her to replace her lawyer with a liberal activist. Hutchinson does her fourth interview, in which she begins making all of her outlandish claims to the committee. Those claims turn out to be false. The J6 committee deletes over 1 terabyte worth of data before the new GOP majority took over. Basically, Liz Cheney committed criminal witness tampering in order to derail President Trump. Remember, Cassidy Hutchinson was the one who said that President Trump tried to grab the wheel of his own car from the Secret Service. You know, like the movie Air Force One, only this is Beast One. Get off my car! And he takes the wheel and throws the Secret Service agents out. And as Julie Kelly says, thanks to Representative Brad Loudermilk for meeting with me today about the new report related to malfeasance of the January 6th committee and next steps for your investigation. Much more come. And as you said, the American people deserve the truth. Julie's been all over this. I mean, she's done a great job. The Democrats' former J6 Select Committee conducted their investigation outside the bounds of legitimacy, suppressed evidence, and deleted key information. That's the finding of the subcommittee looking into all this. Chairman Brad Loudermilk releases the second January 6, 2021 report, top findings. Former Rep. Liz Cheney colluded with star witness Cassidy Hutchinson without Hutchinson's attorney's knowledge. Former Representative Liz Cheney should be investigated for potential criminal witness tampering based on the new information about her communication. Cassidy Hutchinson's most outrageous claims lacked any evidence, and the Select Committee had knowledge that her claims were false when they publicly promoted her. President Trump did not attack the Secret Service detail at any time on January the 6th. President Trump did not have intelligence indicating violence on the morning of January 6th. Cassidy Hutchinson falsely claimed to have drafted a handwritten note for President Trump on January 6th. Representative Cheney and Cassidy Hutchinson baselessly attempted to disbar Hutchinson's former attorney. Former Rep. Liz Cheney used the January 6th Select Committee as a tool to attack President Trump at the cost of investigative integrity and capital security. The January 6th Select Committee was improperly construed and lacked proper authority. The January 6th Select Committee neglected or withheld evidence from its final report and deleted voluminous records it should have preserved. The Department of Defense scapegoated the Washington, D.C. National Guard to distract blame from senior leadership. And there's more. Acting Secretary of Defense Christopher Miller dismissed President Trump's order prior to January 6th to use any and all military assets to keep the demonstrations safe. Secretary of the Army Ryan McCarthy intentionally delayed the D.C. National Guard's response to the Capitol on January 6th despite authorization. The Department of Defense Inspector General published a flawed report containing fabrications and ignored relevant information. The Department of Defense and the Department of Defense Inspector General knowingly and inaccurately placed blame on D.C. National Guard leadership for the delayed response on January the 6th. The Department of Defense Inspector General was not responsive to the subcommittee's requests and even obstructed the subcommittee's investigation. The subcommittee detected an inappropriately close relationship between the Department of Defense and its watchdog Inspector General. The FBI and Capitol Police both failed to investigate the individuals responsible for building fake gallows on Capitol grounds on January the 6th. The gallows is where you would hang somebody. And remember, I've talked about that before. And why not? Why was nobody who did that investigated? I think you know the answer is they were probably in on it. The subcommittee published more than 44,000 hours of CCTV footage from the Capitol. The subcommittee conducted an extensive review of the investigation into the two pipe bombs on January 5th and 6th, and that report is set to be released within the next few days. It's a big report, big deal from this subcommittee. Big deal, no doubt about it. Coming up, a balanced budget amendment could be the thing we need and could work hand in hand with DOGE to actually keep us in line and to solve our nation's fiscal crisis. How can we make it happen? Let's find out. It's our fourth and final hour. Don't forget, Friday, we are live at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, and I want to see you there. The Grand Hotel, 3 to 7 p.m., our Christmas spectacular. It's going to be a blast, kids, so don't miss it. I want to see you on Friday. We'll be right back.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
So the United States government is spending more money on interest for the national debt than on our own national defense, which is absolutely insane. Here to talk about it, he just got done testifying before Congress. Pretty cool if you ask me. Kurt Couchman, Senior Fellow in Fiscal Policy for Americans for Prosperity. Kurt, thanks for joining me here in Philadelphia. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, Rich.
So DOGE obviously is the topic everybody's talking about, how we can save money, streamline the government, get rid of the waste and all the human waste, too, that it's just sitting around doing nothing and save some money here. But it's a very, very deep problem, especially when we talk about the national debt and the interest on the debt. So let's go over all of it, shall we?
Absolutely.
You testified before the House Budget Committee last week. Excellent job, by the way. I watched a lot of it. That was really neat. I mean, is that your first time testifying?
First time testifying before Congress. I have testified before a couple of state legislatures, including in Pennsylvania, where I'm from.
Very cool. Which part of PA are you from?
A little town called Emporium up in the North Central Mountains.
All right, nice. So do you root for the Steelers or the Eagles?
Steelers, but also the Bills sometimes. We're closer to Buffalo than Pittsburgh, you know?
All right, we'll just pretend like you didn't say we'll just pretend like you didn't say those things. Anyway, all right, so you testified before Congress. Cool experience. Tell us about it.
Well, it was great. I worked for two members of the House Budget Committee when I worked for, for members of Congress. So this is my first time, you know, at that table. And it was great because we've built relationships with a lot of the different members on the committee, especially on the Republican side, but some on the Democratic side as well. And it was really an incredible opportunity to get to share some of the research and the analysis that I've been doing over the last 15 years about how Congress can come together and actually agree on something that will help them make better decisions going forward. I focus my remarks on how you would write a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution that could actually pass and would work in conjunction with a bunch of reforms to the statutory budget process, which is all very technical. And, you know, you don't expect people that are going about living their regular lives to focus on that. But if we had a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution, people could talk to their member of Congress and say, hey, why isn't the budget balanced? You guys have a constitutional requirement to do it. So what's wrong with you people? And that would help Congress actually do the job of fixing the system and making the policy changes that you need to get to balance and stay in balance.
No question about it. I think a balanced budget amendment is incredibly important. I think it's something that we can get done with a Republican in the White House and a Republican Senate and a Republican House. And obviously, like any constitutional amendment, it has to be approved by the states. But hey, look, Congress is the first step. So I think they can agree on this. And it's something the American people can get behind, too. I mean, obviously, there might be, I don't know, emergency situations where you'd have to get around it or something. But and then knowing the government, there could always be an emergency. So you'd have to be really careful with the language of it. But I think every reasonable person thinks, look, I got to balance my budget every month if I'm going to stay in business or keep my home. So why should the government be any different?
Yeah. And the trick is that we don't want the government to try to balance the budget every single year. We want them to balance over the medium term or over the business cycle, if you will, because revenue is jumping around so much from year to year that if you try to tie spending and revenue tightly together like that, then you're always having these revenue estimating conferences and adjusting things and taking all these suggestions from the president, which is what we see in Pennsylvania, in Harrisburg. The governor, every time the revenue jumps around, the governor's office comes in with all these different proposals, and then the legislature is just trying to keep up with all of that and decide what makes sense and what it doesn't. And it gives them so much less opportunity to think about how they can prioritize driving their own ideas for upgrading the state or, in the federal context, the country forward. So you want to have a stable, predictable policy platform. That's what a well-crafted balanced budget amendment would provide. And then for emergencies, yeah, they happen. In my view, the best threshold is 2/3. And that's because, well, it's most consistent with the Constitution, but it's also high enough to limit misuse, but low enough that you can actually use it in real emergencies. So that's what I would recommend. It's more of a consensus-based approach rather than trying to define things in the Constitution, which gets really weird when you consider that a lot of these provisions have been in place for, well, almost 250 years now.
So, Kirk Couchman, as you're testifying before Congress and you're offering these ideas to them, give me a sense, give us a sense of the reception that you received and the kind of people that were supportive of it. First, we'll start there.
Yeah, I mean, when you look across the membership of the committee, you've got a little bit more than half as Republicans, a little less than half as Democrats. And Republicans, by and large, are all for this. Most of them have co-sponsored one or more different versions. Several of the members had their own proposals, some of which, you know, have problems. And I talked through what some of those problems are in my testimony. And at the end, and actually one of the best versions of the balanced budget amendment that's been proposed is by Chairman Jody Arrington from West Texas. And there's another really good one by Nathaniel Moran from the other side of Texas. But there's all sorts of different ways you can go about it. And at the end of the hearing, or toward the end of the hearing, Representative Scott Peters, who's a Democrat from San Diego, he said something to the effect of, well, I've never really thought seriously about balanced budget amendments before, but after hearing the testimony today, I think this is something that I need to dig into further. So it appears that at least one Democrat's mind was open to the possibility, and hopefully there were others that didn't say so, but also were in that same space.
And Kurt, when we think about this, I mean, when people talk about a balanced budget amendment, I mean, it's not the sexiest thing in the world, but we do have a fiscal crisis going on. We know that. And so people are very worried about that. But there seems to be this kind of mindset of, hey, listen, it's not going to be my problem. Let my grandkids worry about it. But that's actually not the right way to think about it, because it does have effects on inflation, macro inflation. It has effects on everything. And more people need to wake up. So help us understand in real life, in this present moment of time that we're living in, why we can't just kick the can down the road.
Yeah, we're already being hurt by the excessive debt. We've had inflation the last couple of years. Prices are now permanently higher than they were because Congress borrowed and spent too much. And that essentially forced the Federal Reserve to monetize that debt. And then to keep inflation from being worse, the Fed had to raise interest rates. So we had the 1-2 punch of high inflation combined with high interest rates. And that's causing a real problem with the federal government, where the interest costs, as you mentioned, are now the second highest thing in the budget, second only to Social Security and actually exceeding our defense spending. It's also high enough that it's starting to slow down economic growth through crowd out. It means the government is basically taking money that could be used for private investments just to, you know, pay the debts. So that's not good. But if this continues, then all of these things get worse and we run the risk of a devastating debt crisis. So that would be a huge economic problem. We would see financial market catastrophe in a way that would make the 2008 crisis look like patty cake. And then it would probably ripple into a global national security crisis, because we would probably pull back a lot of our forces to be able to, you know, save some money on the quick. And then with all of the economic and security turmoil happening, the threats to democracy itself, self-government, could become really acute. And that's not a world that we want to experience. We want to head off the crisis before it happens. If it does happen, we do need to be prepared for it, though.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, so then let's tie this into Doge. Obviously, Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, the Department of Government Efficiency, and what they're trying to achieve here. How do these two align?
Well, they are all aimed at a common problem, somewhat overlapping problems. The Doge philosophy is that the federal government is doing too much that isn't adding value for the American people.
Right.
That's spending, that's regulations, and it's not just wasteful, it's actively harmful, a lot of it. When you have a permitting process that takes 7 years in this country instead of, you know, a normal amount of time, like, you know, a couple months, maybe a year, you're losing a lot that could have been created. You're sapping the vitality out of the people. And so that seems to be what the Doge is focused on. The balanced budget amendment and related statutory pieces would do some of that as well. But that's really more focused on making sure that each generation pays for the things that they want government to do. Now, I'm of the view that the federal government is doing way too many things it has no business doing.
Right.
And so I'm very happily within the intersection of those two things. But, you know, a well-crafted balanced budget amendment would have room for a variety of different visions about the size and scope of the federal government. I've got my preference, but in order to get the 2/3 you need in Congress, it has to be something that lots of different members of Congress can imagine their worldview fitting into.
It just seems to me that Doge and a balanced budget amendment, it's the perfect marriage, because if you're going to actually have fiscal discipline and you really want to balance the budget, then you can see where you have to cut government and make it a force and make it a priority and not just simple suggestions. It really kind of holds your feet to the fire. I mean, just kind of put it in layman's terms and be like, all right, you know, do we keep Netflix or do we have to cut it out of the monthly budget if we're going to make our monthly nut? And I think that is a mindset first and foremost that has to happen. And along with that too, obviously, is reining in the regulatory state and reining in the executive branch of government, figuring out where there's overlap and too many agencies and cutting all that. And if you have the discipline that you need, because it's grounded in statute and it's grounded in the Constitution, then I think you get away from excuses, you know, and you get away from, well, we can't cut this because of X or Y.
Well, I might even flip that around and say that a balanced budget amendment would give politicians an excuse to tell people no more often.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, we talked about the statutory pieces of it, too. The biggest thing is that Congress doesn't actually do a budget. It never has. Congress does appropriations bills. They're great. They fund what we think of as government. But collectively, the 12 appropriations bills, they're only 26 or 27% of spending. So a quarter of spending, none of the revenue. It only involves the appropriations committees. You know, when you or I are looking at our household budget, we're looking at everything. We're looking at our income. We're looking at all the different expenses, mortgage, everything. But Congress doesn't do that. And there's a whole lot of members that are left out in the cold in terms of being able to have an impact on what our country's fiscal priorities should be. So we've been working with a couple of bipartisan members on legislation to have a real budget that includes everything, and so that lots of different members can come together and be like, yeah, well, this isn't actually worth doing. Why don't we not do that, or at least not do it so much, and maybe do a little bit more or reduce the deficit, you know, things like that. You have to be able to manage the whole thing in order to get good results, and that's just not what Congress does right now, and that's the root of the problem.
Well said, my friend. Well said. Well, listen, I appreciate your advocacy on this. I really do. And let's hope we can really move the needle once the new Congress comes in a couple weeks and the president comes in about a month. Kirk Couchman, Senior Fellow in Fiscal Policy for Americans for Prosperity. And we'll post a link to your testimony, Kirk, because I think it's really important stuff and people can take a look at it and watch it. And I appreciate you joining us here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Sounds great. Thanks so much for having me, Rich.
Be well, Kurt.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.